Oh, yes. We are back. The Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast, number 7. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Seven.
Lucky seven.
Lucky seven, baby.
Lucky number seven.
You're the goddamn devil.
Some of you probably thought we'd never get this far, but we have. And it's all been because of you lovely people listening. So thank you very much for listening. Today, it is the threesome. Back again. It is myself, Brian, Mario, and Steve.
Three amigos.
All right.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Awesome.
Awesome.
Very good. Very good.
That's what I like to hear. We're going to... Well, before we get into the topic, gentlemen, weekly flavor, what are we consuming today? Mario, what do you got?
So I have a... Since this is race day weekend, I have a mint julep. First race day in May. Who doesn't know about the Kentucky Derby? So
that's true. That's the official drink of the Derby, right?
Exactly. So we have a little Buffalo Trace in the mint juleps today. Nice copper glass.
You've got some real mint here, too. This is no joke.
Yeah, this is serious. This is the real deal.
There's no, like, mint, high fructose, corn syrup nonsense. This is legit mint.
It's all real deal.
Like what's the rest of the recipe? Like, what goes in a mint julep?
All right, so there's a lot of different ways to make mint julep. I looked up a bunch of recipes. I've been to cooking class at Ice. Ice is a pretty good place in the city. But anyway, so the easy way to make it, you do the confectioner's sugar with mint, muddle, bunch of ice, a little more confectioner's sugar, water, and then I splash a little bit of seltzer on top.
Okay.
And what's the...
Garnish with mint, and you're done.
What's the alcohol? Bourbon.
Oh, bourbon.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. And there's bourbon in it.
There's bourbon. I thought it was mint, sugar, and water.
I must say, I'm like...
Yeah,
something's missing.
There's sugar.
I thought that was understood.
And then there's other sugar.
So what I did for this one is the Buffalo Trace. So Buffalo Trace actually... are they the bullet maker?
Ooh, that I'm not sure about.
They make a few bourbons. Mm. Buffalo Trace is the parent
of... All those bourbon houses, yeah. They make a couple different boutique brands, yeah.
Yeah, so...
So I'm going to make that my second drink, because Mario made a beautiful drink for me. So I'll make that my second drink. But right now, and I always start out the show with a nice brew... And what I'm drinking is the Captain Warren's, which I'm telling you, every single beer I have with these guys, I love. And this is the Captain's Kolsch, which is a German-style ale. And the reason I'm drinking this is because I'm actually headed to Germany.
Oh!
Next week.
Where in
I'm,
Germany?
Pretty excited about. It is a town called Holzminden.
Holzminden.
Yeah.
Holzminden.
You got to say it just like a German.
Holzminden.
The Z is like a TZ.
Yeah, that's right. Holzminden.
There you go.
And it's the mothership. It's where my company is headquartered. So I'll be going there for a few days.
Nice.
And flying into Hanover. So I can't wait to try many German beers while I'm over there. Because there, it's all local brews.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Every single town has their own brewery. They find it odd when they come to the States and we have beer throughout the whole country because they have a few of those, which we all know of, right? Like Beck's, for example.
Farsteiner.
Also Paulner. Those are the majors.
But for sure.
But they drink all the local beers.
Yeah. Good stuff.
It's fresh. And that's key for beer.
That'll be great. Yeah, you'll have a good time
there.
Wait.
I can't wait.
You have to report back to us anything that you taste and sample that might be good. Not that we can get it here, but, you know.
Yeah, what do you think? How much do you think I could smuggle back?
I think you want to consume it there and just smuggle back the memory.
Okay.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
Let it
live where it needs to live.
Especially beer nowadays, like, you can usually try to get beer, like, most places.
Right. It would be kind of fun to bring a couple bottles back, though, for next week's podcast.
That would... Hey, I'm not asking you to do anything. I don't want you to mule anything for me.
Beer mule.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be really produce, though, right? It wouldn't be breaking any of those laws, right?
Actually, you're allowed a certain amount of alcohol to bring back, I think. We gotta look at the website after this.
We'll find the limits.
Yeah.
All right.
Beautiful. And I, too, am drinking a mint julep in honor of the Kentucky Derby. I probably won't watch it. I don't really care.
Oh, I love the
you
Kentucky Derby with the hats and shit.
I'm a fan of the topical drinking. So
we're drinking Buffalo Trace, and these
Buffalo Trace. They make a large collection of other bourbons. Eagle Rare, which is an awesome bourbon. Pappy Van Winkle, which I still have, I had it once, and it was amazing.
I don't know if that's the same Pappy or if it's the Van Winkle.
It's still Van Winkle-ish. I mean, you can't have it.
Yes.
Is it Robert Van Winkle, Vanilla Ice? Perhaps he makes a bourbon now?
I think he does. That'd be great.
So Vanilla Ice makes a bourbon.
Vanilla Van Winkle.
Vanilla Van Winkle. Who wouldn't want
that? I could see him making a cola, you know? I'm not sure really about
No, I think energy drink.
Would you like a Vanilla Ice?
I could see him bringing back
No, an energy drink. It'd be like some sort of weird vanilla ice-themed energy drink, you know?
Dude, you know what? He does a lot of construction. I could see being on a construction site going, I'm going for a Vanilla Ice during the day.
A Vanilla Ice.
Woo! You come back all crazy and shit.
Like a bricklayer.
Nuts. He'd be like, did you have a Roy Lewis? No, I had a Vanilla Ice.
This sweet.
That would be good.
Yeah. It'd be all good. Look at that, Van Winkle. Stag. Elmer T.
Elmer T. Lee is good.
Elmer T. Lee, I love.
Blanton's is delicious too. So,
I love Blanton's. Blanton's has a little horse on top.
It's fancy.
Fancy.
So yeah, a lot of good bourbons from the good folks at Buffalo Trace. So we're gonna get into our topic this week, and you know, because of the earthquake and the tragedy out in Nepal.
So what was the title?
Avalanche.
With an exclamation point.
Avalanche. Points. Yes, we're gonna talk about avalanches and. You know, we didn't really know what to talk about this week, and then, the tragedy happened in Nepal, so, we figured we would start with that and then talk about some avalanche safety and things to look out for and, what is an avalanche and how do they happen. So, first, started off, terrible tragedy out in Nepal. They're saying that now over 5,000 people have died. It's really terrible. There's all kinds of videos online. We just watched one before of an avalanche happening at base camp. Which looks absolutely horrifying. You see people kind of running to the tent, trying to escape it. But when you're there, you're what can you do?
So I saw a few things on today, and one of the senior people at Google passed on the first thing. Yeah. But I was pretty focused on we were talking about the podcast, so I'm doing a little research and looking stuff up because I live in a cave. I don't follow public events, which I'm pretty bad at. But I started looking stuff up, and I was like, wow, these avalanches are crazy. And then I was like, let's not forget the fact that, a lot of people were, affected by but the earthquake was horrible.
I mean, 7.8 magnitude.
That's pretty tremendous.
Especially in an area where they don't have a ton of, advanced engineering and building structures. Everything's a lot of mud huts and,
It's a lot of
stone.
Old building, and, even where it is, if you look at it, it's all remote areas. It's wild, how remote it really is.
It's truly amazing the magnitude of these natural disasters when you look at the numbers and you said, over 5,000 people have been killed by this, and we compare that to events that are tragic, like 9/11.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more. It's just amazing how when nature turns against us, how big the magnitude is and how many people it affects, and just as quickly and just as swift.
Yeah, I mean, the earthquake went, and I saw a video from that. And the earthquake is going, and people are just running, and stuff was—it was bedlam with the way things were built out there, and things were coming down. It was pretty quick. I mean,
yeah. And they're saying the death toll could really rise too, because there's so many people who are—they're unknown at the moment, or they're missing.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on that. I mean, there's not a really good head count in that region in the first place. So
well,
a lot of it is assumed.
I mean, so we had the plane crash that happened in the Alps a few months ago. And
A few weeks ago.
And that was bad because of the remoteness of where they crashed, right?
Mm-hmm.
That made things a lot more difficult. Where the earthquake and the avalanches have happened, that's a very remote region too. So it's like in more of a mass scale, this happened. And it's just it's crazy. I mean.
Yeah, and one of the articles that I saw, they were talking about Kathmandu Airport. How it usually handles about 40 flights per day. They say they're now more than double that. And it's people trying to get out, to get home, people trying to bring in aid, food and supplies. And it's just not equipped for it. So that makes it even more chaotic. Now people are protesting, saying that they're starving, that they can't get food. And it's a real mess right now. So
while we're on the topic, why don't we talk about, things that you could look at to try to give to help out people like that are
suffering? There's a couple different ways you can do that. One of the things that I saw, Reddit set up, you know, they did some research and they came up with some reputable charities, because a lot of times you don't really know how much of the money is getting to the people who really need it. So they had two of them, MAP International and Direct Relief, that were two of the most reputable ones. So I'm going to post a link on there on Twitter, which is at Ski Bum Podcast. And I didn't mention the new website, skibumpodcast.com, where we'll have all of our information on there, all the links to everything. You can hit that up. But I will post the links to the Reddit page, which has, you know, the links on there. I know the Bitcoin community is adding a lot of, I think they have about a couple thousand dollars worth of Bitcoins they're sending over for relief. Mario, what do you have also?
So I have up Time. Time has a site where they have the top six ways you can help. So they have Save the Children is the top one. Red Cross, American Red Cross, always big. They're actually always needing blood donations wherever you are. Global Giving. So there's Global Giving is a they're running a project for disaster relief. Friends Service Council Nepal, FSCN, Oxfam, and Goonj.
Goonj.
Indian Relief Agency.
G-O-O-N-J, Goonj.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll post the link to the Time article. So, you know, you'll have a whole list of different ways you can contribute and, you know, do what you can to help.
And if you work for a company that does, you know, they do matching, like, try to go through them, too, because a lot of companies now are putting stuff together to help, which is a good way to give. I mean,
yeah, definitely. And like I said, I know the Bitcoin community is getting together, and through BitPay and ChangeTip, they've had, you know, hundreds of donations already that they're doing. So there's several different ways that you can, you know, contribute and just do what you can to help, because, you know, we're all pretty lucky where we are, and anything that we can do to help is, you know, going to go a long way at this point. So, you know, enough about the tragedy in Nepal. I mean, there's only so much we can do, and it's been reported by much smarter and better educated people than us. So what we'll do is we'll kind of go over some avalanche safety now that, you know, you can use when you're going on a ski trip.
But it brings up a good point. Like, so I hear all the stuff in the news. Like, I know earthquakes, what they are, like, how stuff happens. You know, avalanche I've heard for years, and everybody talks about, oh, there's an avalanche here, whatever. I know it's a bunch of snow falling. I don't know what it really means. So, like, let's get to the bottom of, like, what an avalanche is. Like, what is it?
Where do you go to? Are they going to happen everywhere? I mean, if you're at a regular ski resort and you're sitting on your groomed trails, chances of you encountering avalanche are pretty slim.
Pretty slim.
Pretty non-existent, pretty actually. Not. It's right. Pretty much never going to happen.
Right. But there are reasons for that, right? So, if you're out west, and you're in an avalanche-prone area, like steeps and stuff like that. Like, if you're on a groomed trail, like, there's a lot that's been done to make sure that that is avalanche-free.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah,
and it has a lot to do with the amount of snowfall, right? So one of the questions a lot of people have is, well, do avalanches happen in the East Coast? Now, do I have to worry about this in Vermont?
Generally, no.
Pretty much no.
And the answer is really, the answer is really no.
Yeah.
But why is that?
Has a lot to do with the amount of snowfall and also how steep the mountains are. And the reason why the snowfall is so important to avalanche is the snow falls and then the sun hits the snow, causes a ice layer. And it could be a very light ice layer. And then more snow falls on top of that. And that's a shelf. And that's the shelf that ends up becoming the avalanche.
It depends on the type of snow,
again,
too, right?
And again and again. Yes.
So if it's dense snow, like on the East Coast, there's a lot of dense snow, a lot of watery snow. So that's like really packed in. It's packed, right? So if you ever go out to a place such as like Telluride, I was there before with you guys. I was there another time, and the entire week, the bowls weren't open. They were blasting for avalanche the entire day. I mean, we were talking about the entire week. And
it's a much lighter snow.
Yeah, and it's very steep. So it's like steep terrain, light snow, and if they don't have a good base, what happens is things slide. So it falls on top, eventually gets to like a tipping point where it's just carrying weight, and it just, one little thing just makes it all go down.
You know, being out in Utah as well, you know, Snowbird and Alta over there, they tend to, if there's any significant snowfall, they have to blast. just to make sure that, you know, that they can control that. And then if people go back country, they're not going to be susceptible as susceptible to avalanches. So, yeah, I mean, all those.
So let's talk about cool-ass ways to snow blast.
Yeah.
I've been in Telluride, like, I got the shit scared out of me when, like, I was standing there and waiting for a lift going, like, oh, Prospect Bowl's not open. And I heard this ba-boom, like, something blew up next to me. Lifty came out of the freaking, you know, the hut, and he's like, that was pretty cool. I'm like, dude, what the fuck was that? Like, it was crazy. He's like, that was a sled bomb, man. It was like a 200-pound sled bomb. I'm like, it was 200 pounds of explosive, like, throwing down a sled bomb. I was like, that's fucking awesome, but scary as shit.
Yeah, right.
That must be a great job setting that up.
Yeah. But think about, like, everybody's seen on TV, what is it, Vale or Aspen does the blast with the gun?
Yeah.
Like, that, the howitzer. Like, it's, fuck, that's
it's
awesome.
Like a mortar, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the sled bomb, though, I have to say, that's pretty cool. Because that means you're on the top and you're watching that happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you got to lay that sled. I mean, do they use a helicopter, or do they actually have the Rangers go out there and,
you know, you see,
place the sled?
You see badass dudes on Telemark Keys going up there and being like, yeah, I can do it because I'm on Telemark. They ain't fucking around.
They are not.
Guys were telling me, too, they drop stuff from helicopters sometimes, like, to get percussion, like, all sorts of stuff. It's like daisy cutter, bunker busters, like all that shit.
But
they just get to move that snow.
So basically, does the average skier really have to worry about an avalanche?
If you're not going backcountry, generally, no.
Probably 99% of skiers don't have to worry about it.
Right.
But I gotta say, like I said on the show before, the first time I went to Telluride, first day we were there, they were like, they got 4 feet of snow. Like the day we came in, they said, don't go in certain areas. We didn't go in certain areas. Some people went off thing. Two people got caught in an avalanche on trail in an area that was closed off.
Ah, on trail, but it was closed off.
It was closed off. So they knew enough. They were like,
survived.
We're closing this. One guy got out, and the other guy, they had to dig out. I guess he survived. But
so that's one of the things. Like, so if you do
probably
see,
got messed up.
If you see avalanche warning signs,
take them
probably,
seriously.
Yeah, adhere to them. You know, these guys aren't trying to, like, ruin your day. You know, they're trying to make sure everyone's safe and that people don't get, you know, trapped in these avalanches, because it's bad. I mean, think about, you know, all that snow coming at you, and, you know, what you can do. You're trapped. Nature is going to trap you. You know, you're not going to defeat that. You're not going to outski it. It's going
to
get you.
You're not going to be cool enough to outlast the avalanche. It's
unless
get
you have, like, James Bond, like, rocket boots. Which,
even then, a lot of the James Bond does a little cut, and then they put the double in there, and then the guy that got buried, okay, well, let's film on, you know.
It's going to be tricky.
There's a video of a guy that was in a snowmobile, and they used to do this for sport. They used to do this for fun. And they knew that the area was prone for avalanches, and they would go all the way up the hill, right? And they would do a wicked turn and try to kick off the avalanche and then head down.
So
right?
Almost like using
like
a half
surf
pipe.
The avalanche.
Right.
That's fucking awesome.
So they're doing this back
and
forth.
I actually think I saw this video. It's fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last guy, because, you know, there was four guys before him, you know, loosening up, the last guy, so the runt of the group, he goes up, he's not even halfway down, and the thing is, the avalanches are fast. This guy is on a snowmobile, a high-powered snowmobile, gassing it fully, going downhill, and the avalanche overcomes him, you know, totally overcomes the snowmobile, flips him all over, and I tell you what, he nearly lost his life. If he wasn't with a group of people knowing what they were doing, they knew they were being stupid. He was under snow.
I think I saw this. He didn't have his beacon on, right?
He didn't have anything on.
Because he thought, like, everybody else went, it didn't go, and he left it with...
So they found him pretty quickly, like, you know, but they got lucky. They got real lucky. Obviously, he got very lucky.
Yeah, and, you know, we were just looking at some of the stats from this past year. I guess, what's the organization that does this?
It was Avalanche.com.
Avalanche.com. They keep track
of... It sounds like they do Avalanche. I don't know. They must be legit. I didn't really do my
fact
checking.
It isn't the hockey
checking.
Team?
I'm just
isn't the Colorado Avalanche hockey team?
It could have been
right.
The
Colorado... Patrick Waugh and Claude Lemieux were doing this.
It could have been how many of the hockey players got caught in Avalanche. But.
So what they do is they keep track of how many fatalities happened. And I guess it's the U.S. and Canada, or just the U.S.?
This, I think, was just the U.S., but it's officially reported ones. I don't know.
Officially reported, yeah.
To them, or, like, I don't know.
I think they're pretty official.
Yeah.
People don't really get.
Wow. I mean, how rare is it?
I mean
it's kind of rare. I mean, people get lost and then no one hears from them. You know,
Right. But if you're skiing, you're kind of a highfalutin type of guy.
My buddy's missing.
Know? People are going to know where you're coming from. It's not like a homeless person where they go missing and no one knows.
Exactly.
But maybe I didn't like you. And I'm like, you know, we went out, he didn't come back.
Some hedge fund guy's missing, a CEO. People are going to know. You know?
Right.
You know, it's not Tyrone Biggums who's missing, you know? So yeah, we're looking at the stats here. And this year, 2014 to 2015, there was recorded 9 fatalities. And this is skiers, snowboarders, climbers, and snowmobilers. So it's a collection of
reported fatalities, not injuries. There's probably a lot more injuries, people that got out of avalanche or messed up or whatever, but
yeah,
fatalities.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, and it's Montana, Alaska, Utah, Colorado are the areas that they were reported.
It's mostly North America, right?
One in Silverton. These are all U.S. Yeah,
Silverton, Montana.
Yeah, Silverton. We were just talking about Silverton, and someone died there. One backcountry skier caught, buried, and killed.
Wow. Interesting. When everyone there is
guided.
This is
a bad way to die. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
It was a guide.
Could have been a guide.
It could be guide, could be...
the guy testing out, the new guy testing.
Could be an expert skier.
That's fucked up.
Or some guy being cocky, be like, I'm going over there. You guys go that way.
Yeah.
I'm doing my own thing.
Either way, it's sad as fuck, man.
Oh,
horrible.
It's terrible. Rough way to go.
Bad way to go.
But, I mean, so that was 9 fatalities this year. Last year, there was 35 fatalities.
Yeah.
And we were kind of talking about it earlier. We weren't sure if it was because, you know, maybe the, the Rangers were a little more prepared. Or was there just less snow this year?
Like to see the 5-year average. You know,
so the reason
really 5 to 10 year average, really, to understand that number and what the major difference is. Because you know, if you look at a 5-year number, then you look at it versus the snowfall and you'll understand it better.
Yeah.
You got that information?
The reason I looked it up was because I remember last year they were saying there was a record number of like avalanches going on.
Hmm.
Because there's a lot of snowfall unexpected out west. It was really like deep powder fell. This year, I almost think either people were like more prepared for it out west. People East Coast like just got powder, late season out west. I don't know what went on, but I also know, you know, looking at this and thinking about stuff that's transpired. So like Nepal, they had a really big avalanche in 2014. End of 2014, it was I think it was 16 people Everest Base Camp. Got buried died in a avalanche, and a bunch of Sherpas got taken out. Like, and the Sherpa community is very tight knit. It's a very prestigious position because I think I saw something where they make about $5,000 a year, which to them is gigantic. Like in that, you know, demographic.
It's like a well revered position.
Yeah,
in
so,
that community, yeah.
But it took out a lot of Sherpas.
They were protesting, right? For higher wages.
Yeah, they were protesting for higher wages, not doing trips and all. And I think everything just started getting back to normal when all this stuff happened. But I also think, remember it was Switzerland, U.S. ski team.
Austria. It was in Austria this December, wasn't it?
December, yeah.
Two kids. I think they were both 18,
19.
Two kids
passed, but there were like 6 of them got caught in it. And that was a big thing for us here. I mean, that was another avalanche. You know, they're skiing, they go a little off-piste, and they don't think anything of it, and there's an avalanche, you know?
And these are, you know, these are guys on the U.S. ski team. I mean,
these are great skiers.
These are amazing skiers.
Take our ski ability times 100.
Yeah, I think the key is really to...
Ronnie Burlak and Bryce Astle. They were 20 and 19 years old.
Sad.
It's terrible, yeah. It happened
in
Austria, yeah. Oof. 6 athletes were free skiing at the resort.
Yeah. Free skiing, baby.
Yes.
Which, you know, you go, and that's the whole thing. You go off-piste, you go backcountry. We've gone off-piste in this country, out of country, and I tell you what, it's a little scary because you don't know the terrain, and you think you know it, and you hope you know it. So a lot of times what we do, I do the little pussy thing. I go down the trail, and I scope everything out, and then I'll be like, okay, we can go here, here, and here. And that's it, you know?
I know. I mean, it's. I know why anyone does this. It's beautiful. It's awesome. It's fresh tracks.
It's freeing.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And you know, you do it. You've done it 100 times. I'm sure all these guys that end up getting caught. It's not the first time they went backcountry.
No, it never is. So it's one of those things that, I mean, you know, you kind of, first thing you have to do is look at if things are marked, you know, do not ski here, avalanche warning. The first thing I do is be mindful of that, because if there's been avalanches and there are prone to be more avalanches, stay away.
And there's a lot of places that have, like, recommendations for the gear should have, shouldn't have, extra stuff. So the number one thing you always hear about is the avalanche beacon.
Yes.
So what that is it's a GPS. If you get buried, you trigger it off, or it triggers off automatically, and people are going to at least find you, right? So you want to be found. That's always a good thing. And they range, I've seen anywhere from 150 to 400 to up. And they do different things.
And you know, and why they're so important is because they're relatively inexpensive when you think about all the equipment. And should you find yourself in that situation, suffocation is usually the number one reason for death.
Yeah.
And there are air pockets in these avalanches. And if you can, you know, keep yourself in a situation where you are breathing and your time is going to be limited. You could possibly poke a hole, but you know, if you held on to your poles, you could possibly poke a hole. But
well,
you set the beacon off.
The probe is like the to find other people, right?
Right.
That pole, right? The aluminum.
And then the shovel. I mean, the shovel is kind of.
Let's go back to the receiver. I guess what it has, there's multiple antennas that it usually has. There's like digital and analog, and you know, you can, it's able to, I guess, detect where you are. Someone can detect heart rates. It's a pretty amazing device, and it's one of those things that you should, if you value your life at all, and you're gonna go backcountry, and it is prone to avalanches, spend a couple $100, you know, between $150 and $500. It can be life and death sometimes.
And you're going to use it your whole career.
Yeah.
Your whole skiing career. So I think that's an easy one, right? So whenever you're going to go backcountry, pick up one of those beacons and
learn how to use it, because that's one of the things. It's not like a cell phone where it's super intuitive how to use it.
What's really messed up, I saw a statistic that, like, you have to make sure it has the batteries. People take it thinking that it's charged, and then they go out and they're like, we didn't find somebody because it wasn't responding.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the worst thing in the world. Like, you check the batteries. Like,
yes.
It's really amazing, these beacons. They've come down so much in price. They used to be over $1,000. I used to be into boating and jet skiing. Because
you're highfalutin.
That's right.
Boom.
That's what we do.
That's right.
And I've been stuck in the middle of the water. I've been in a jet ski in the Hudson River.
Actually, let's go into your... I want to hear the story again because it was a freaking awesome story. And I tell you what, to this day, I take note because, like, I have to make sure I check everything before I go out. Fucking, you gotta say this. All
right, so my story, my jet ski story. So I buy a wave runner. It was early in the season. I got a great winter price, and I think I took it out. It was probably March, last week of March. So the water's around, it's in the 40s at that point. I had a shorty on. And
where are you doing this? What?
In the Hudson River.
Hudson River,
so
okay.
So
the wonderful,
living,
beautiful,
you may
clean,
have heard of it. It's
crystal blue clear.
Right.
So from New Jersey?
You can imagine, I didn't buy a wave runner for the Hudson River. I bought it for the beach, but I lived near
the
city.
What was
the
temperature of the water about that time?
It was around the 40s, which I learned later on that your body can only last... so many minutes, like 10, 15 minutes.
That's pretty messed up that you know that. But
and then hypothermia sets in.
Okay.
So you know, testing it out, I was eager to try this out, and
what part of the Hudson were you on? Like the far
I was
north,
right,
or?
Underneath the George Washington Bridge.
So you were pretty much like Fort Lee.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's a clean part of the river, though.
Right.
Oh, it's the best part.
So that was further up north gets even cleaner. The
it's
Hudson,
beautiful.
I, actually,
north, it's gorgeous.
The Hudson River up north is gorgeous.
Yeah, once you like, if you're above like Schenectady, where it's not as polluted, it's
right.
Beautiful.
Yeah, anywhere after the Tappan Zee, I think you're okay.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there. I was between.
So you were on the start of that.
You were between Fort Lee and the Bronx.
So it's between in the 30s, 40s, and you decide to go out there.
So I decided to go out there. You know, I just got this toy, and every time we get a new toy, we're always eager to try it out. So so I'm there, and my wife's hanging out with me, and we just got married, and she's doing her homework, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna head out. I'm gonna do one last burn. We always called it a burn, so I'm gonna do one last burn, and
I figured I'm gonna love that thing. I'm gonna zip around.
I'm gonna take it to full blast, go to the middle of the Hudson, and then head back because it was just a trial ride. So I go out there and the thing just dies. It just cuts out on me.
Oh.
And this time, this is
So where are you in terms of the river? Because it's a pretty big river, pretty wide.
I'm right in the middle of it. I mean, I'm really in the middle of the Hudson River. I'm really halfway to Jersey. I'm halfway to New York.
So you're in like officially the shipping lanes.
I'm in the shipping lanes where the barges go. Right, the barges that have no pilots.
the ghost barges.
We all know about the Challenger, you know, exploding, and they, when they did their root cause analysis, it was because of an O-ring. Well, jet skis, a lot of people don't realize this, jet skis have an O-ring attached to the drive shaft, and they're jet propelled. So there's a propeller, and it pulls water in and then squirts it out, and that's how jet skis go forward.
It's jet in the ski.
So there's an O-ring that connects that drive shaft to the hull of the boat to ensure that water doesn't come in. So I had an O-ring failure.
Ooh.
So me and the folks on the Challenger had an O-ring failure.
Term it a different way. It you split an O. You had a big O. What's right?
So I'm not exactly sure what happened, but it was a sea-do. They knew about the problem.
Sea-don't.
I don't have any problem. I will say this is a true story, and Sea-Doo was aware of the problem, and they sent out a recall, not to the people that own the Sea-Doos. They sent the recall out to the shops.
Oh.
So if anyone ever brought the Sea-Doo in for a repair, they're like, hey, while they're in there changing the oil, winterizing it, summarizing it, why don't you change the O-ring, and here's the fix for it.
Because if they're bringing it in, they weren't stuck in the Hudson, it's all good.
Right. So I'm in the middle of Hudson, and
Nowhere near a Sea-Doo shop.
Nowhere near a Sea-Doo shop. It sinks.
So here's the messy part. You're doing the gas, and what's happening?
Well, it died real quick. I tried to start it up, and it was kind of funny because and this is why you have to be prepared, and this is why I say get the beacons, all right? Because here I am in the middle of the Hudson. I just bought it. I'm like, okay, it's definitely sinking. It won't start. It's done. It's going down. I see other boaters. I know what to do. I took the boating course. And that's the thing, like going back country, there is no course, right? So I had a boating course, so I knew what I had to do.
That's pretty good.
So I reach in, I grab my horn, and I know I need to do, you know, three quick ones and then three bursts of the horn to alert the other boaters that are coming by. And unfortunately, I just bought it. I never tried it. So when I hit the horn, it went, eh. The horn was as dead as the jet ski.
It was like, wah, wah.
It went, wah, and I went, wah.
So you're floating in pretty cold water right
now.
So
I'm like,
and you're just like, wah.
I was really playing it cool up until that point. And then, you know, at this point, because it is sinking rather quickly, I noticed that my feet are numb. And I'm just trying to maintain myself out of the water as long as possible. And I was thinking of the Titanic movie of all movies, right?
You're playing that little last song. You're on the iceberg.
I'm thinking of Leonardo DiCaprio, right? And what was he saying? He said, we just need to stay out of the water as long as possible, right?
So you were relying on Leonardo DiCaprio and
his hand
for advice.
Leonardo DiCaprio, if Leonardo is listening to this, you saved his life.
Jack.
I mean... Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, I'm just saying. I was thinking of him. And I was thinking how he was.
We know that, but
he ran all the way to the top of the boat, right? And he did. He really, you know, him and
if
what
you
was
could
the girl's
stand
name?
On top of the boat and call like the coast.
Are you the king of the world? on your sinking jet ski.
I'm the king of the world. Before he sunk, he's like, I'm the king of the world. That's what you're doing. That's why.
Yeah. So
that's what.
What's interesting is the jet skis don't
out.
Sink all the way. And this is, you know, this is something that a lot of skiers do in the summertime. They have jet skis.
I'm the king of the world.
Hit
a major O, and then it went.
They, you know, you folks out there in podcast land, you have boats, and you and you have wave runners and all that. So they don't sink all the way if you get off them. So when I was on it and it was sinking, wow. I realized that I needed to jump off it, otherwise it would completely sink and I'd lose my $7,000 investment. So I jumped off of it, and sure enough, it seemed to hold itself. It was about 6 inches out of the water. And I said to myself, well, I guess I need to swim to the shore.
Oh, wow.
It was really funny when I was on the shore.
Realize how good of a swimmer or bad a swimmer you were at that point, right?
What was really funny was the thoughts, you know, thoughts that come into your mind in these situations. I said to my wife, no more than 20 minutes before that, she asked me, how far across is the Hudson River by the George Washington Bridge? I said, I don't know. I know I couldn't swim it. I was like, I know for sure. I think it's probably a mile. All I know is I could definitely couldn't swim across that.
But I hope I could swim half of it.
So this is interesting. So I started swimming, and I got about 3 or 4 strokes, and my arms were numb.
Wow.
And this is what happens when hypothermia comes in, and you wonder, like...
So how long are you stranded there right now?
I was stranded there, and I know exactly how long I was stranded there because I had a cell phone, and I called 911, and they weren't prepared. They didn't know what a jet ski was, and there was someone who didn't speak English very well and couldn't articulate what the
problem was. They spoke Russian, right?
Yeah, they didn't speak
what
Russian.
They speak?
I don't know what they spoke, but they referred me to the fire department. So while I was on there, my phone said I was on the line for 10 minutes, and they transferred me to the fire department. And at that point, I knew.
And they only spoke Dutch, right?
Yeah. I was on my own because I was hoping by then there would be somebody coming. So at 10 minutes, my legs were... I was still barely in the water. My legs were numb. And then I just hung up the phone and I was done. I just put the phone in my pocket because I knew I was... I couldn't keep the phone out of the water at that point, right? It was time to just start swimming. So
are we ready for a break to look like the crying and go?
No, it's all good. I mean, listen, we're athletes, all of us. That's why we ski and that's why we snowboard.
I am not surprised you don't do triathlons right now.
So how did it all end?
How it ended was really awesome. So as you know, so now I'm not thinking about Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm thinking about my arms that are now numb.
He's manning up.
I can't swim, so I was like, all right, well, I can't swim, so I can't use my arms, so I'm gonna kick. So I kicked until I couldn't move my legs anymore, and then my arms kind of came back, right? So my heart rate
blood's got
bit.
Flowing, kind of.
Yeah.
Guess, get things.
So then I went over to my stomach and I started doing my arms. And then, you know, they were dying out faster than my legs. And then my arms died out. Then I switched over to my legs. I kicked them more. And I'm like, I'm literally 15 feet from the shore. And there's all these jagged rocks. And I hear this cop, like, whizzing by. I'm like, oh, well, that's good. They called somebody.
Were you swimming to Jersey or New York?
I decided to swim towards Jersey. Actually,
New York, they were like, come on, you got a little more to go. You got 15 feet. Come on.
Right. So here I am, like 15 feet from the shore, right? And there comes the cavalry. Coast Guard comes whipping in with the helicopters, right?
Awesome.
They come in, right? And I look and I'm like, oh, they're over my jet ski. My jet ski's in the middle of the river, and the helicopter's like swooping in. They're like 10 feet and there's like water everywhere. And then they notice me, right? So they're like, oh, well. So they like come whipping over to me. Now I can't fucking breathe because the helicopter's spitting up so much goddamn water. I'm like, you're not helping this situation, right? Mm-hmm. And then I thought to myself, shit, I climbed down the Grand Canyon. And when I was on the Grand Canyon, the guides all told us that, you know, there's somebody gets rescued from the Grand Canyon every single year. And every single day, actually, not every year, every day. And you have to pay for that. It's $2,000 to be rescued by a helicopter.
I had another 15 feet.
I'm good. I looked up at the helicopter, and I'm thinking to myself, I just lost like $6,000-$7,000 on this jet ski. Ooh. I'm not going to spend $10,000 for a helicopter rescue. Fuck you. I got this.
I'm good.
At this point in time, I'm already, like I said, 15 feet away.
Just in a tugboat to tow my jet ski in?
And by the way, they're making me like I can't breathe, so I wave them off and I...
You know what I'm bad? If you... Baller. Swim back to the jet ski. Heli jet ski. Boom. Right in there.
But actually, the Coast Guard was amazing. So I went to shore, and the Coast Guard, the cutter came, which was really bitching. The helicopter went away, and the cutter came. And I remember, this was a big purchase of mine. You know, this was like right out of college. It was a big deal. They pick up the jet ski with the crane, and it's like bouncing across the hull of the cutter.
That's good.
Like
it's good stuff. Don't worry about it.
They pick it up. It's like literally I'm watching it go like boom. Boom, right? Bounce it. I'm like, oh my God. So it was great. So they brought it to shore and all these big Coast Guard dudes, they're like, they look at me, they're like, oh, you know what? They looked at me and they're like, well, let's see if it was your fault. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, most of the time people are really not thinking and they don't put the plug in. I'm like, well, I'm sure I put the plug in, and sure enough they bring it over. They plop it on the ground, and
boom! You're like, oh, come on! You
like, I was at this point. I waxed the thing, you know. Now it's like banging up against the hull of the cutter.
Oh, like cigar, like suck it up, pretty boy.
Yeah,
exactly. Popeyes on there. Yeah.
So it turned out, it was filled with water. The plug was in it, and then I called up Sea-Doo and I talked to them and I talked to the dealership and they were of zero help. I would never buy a Sea-Doo product.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they have a great product. I enjoyed it. I think they're one of the best jet skis. But, I was a little disappointed. You know, and
so Yamaha's,
Kawasaki's.
They didn't help you at all. They didn't give you
also with the way they do the recall, right?
I mean, look, you know what? They're fine, but given a choice, I'm going to buy a Yamaha, Honda, or Kawasaki.
Or all three.
Over that product.
So the moral story is don't buy a used jet ski.
Yeah,
when it all comes down to it.
Or have a little beacon or something that if you're dying in the water or something.
Here's the deal.
Pretty messed up.
Moral story is if I had a beacon, I would just set off that beacon. I wouldn't have been worried. I wouldn't have lost my cell phone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have panicked. I would have just chilled out. I would have known that someone was going to come and pick me up.
You know, I'd be freaked out having the beacon and setting it off while I'm going to work. So, like, helicopters swoop in, they grab
by like, accident
well, at work.
Listen, there's a Breitling watch that has that in it.
Really?
Yes, there's a Breitling watch that has a GPS tracker.
Those. I want those.
We'll get a 3-pack of Costco.
People have been.
We can track each other.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they sell them in 3-packs.
I'm sure the new Apple iWatch, I'm sure has some sort of beacon.
Oh.
But it'll die when it touches.
Dude, what's up, man? I see where you're at.
Yeah.
No, Breitling is—it's a big deal. People have let it off, and it has a.
If
GPS
anybody
tracker.
From Breitling is listening, I would love another Breitling.
Yes, our
with a GPS because I have my Breitling now.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
But I would love another Breitling, especially with the GPS.
Right.
Just saying,
our wrists look so much better with big baller ass Breitlings on there than
I
they do when they're
Breitling.
When they're nude.
I'm a Breitling aviator fan. Just saying,
they're beautiful watches.
But I will end the story on a positive note. You know, it is they are amazing resilient machines. I ended up starting it up, fogged it out with an oil fogger, which was what they told me to do. And the Wave Runner still runs. I used it for 2 years, and
nice.
I ended up selling it. And it's a really as long as you get that salt water out of it within a certain couple hours, which I did, they're fine. They're resilient.
That's great.
And on another note, your wife got to finish like the part of a book that she was reading. And I remember talking to her, she was like, yeah, I see these helicopters going around. She's like, oh, there must be something
it was the
going
fourth,
on. She's like,
the fourth,
I hope Steve's okay.
It was the fourth Game of Thrones book. It was 900 pages. And
yeah,
exactly.
It was really actually kind of funny because my aunt and uncle, they got their wedding photos on top of the mountain that overlooks the George Washington Bridge.
Oh.
And every year for their anniversary or near there, they go, they have a little picnic. And they were there that day.
Wow.
And they saw the helicopter.
So everybody's seen the helicopters
wow,
and stuff.
Nice.
And they were like, wow.
Yeah, some numbnuts says jet ski broke down in the water or something.
And they're like, we know that
the
guy.
Bax is talking to your wife and she's like, yeah, you know, there's some business going out there. I didn't know what's going on. Steve must be riding around in his jet ski. I'm like, yeah, well, Steve, that's messed up.
So I actually recommend for summer sports. the Beacons. I mean, why not?
Beacons are very important. If you're going to be out somewhere remote, that's really what it all comes down to.
You also don't know when you're going to be remote. How many times have we heard stories about people in sea kayaks? And how many times they go out in the morning?
Well, I wear a road ID for biking and for skiing.
Right.
I mean,
it's not a big deal. You're on your kayak. You're going across the ocean. The undertows are kind of crazy. Just keep your beacon.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
It's a smart move. It's a few hundred bucks, and it's
my road ID is more so to identify the body, but hey, that still works for me.
Right.
It's something.
So yeah, so definitely use a beacon transceiver. One other thing that you're going to want to have if you're going backcountry, because we're bringing it back to snow,
yes,
out of the water, frozen snow, backpack with an airbag.
That those things are huge. Awesome.
They look a little bit cumbersome, but they're the thing that could probably save your life immediately is to have one of those. Make sure your CO2 cartridge is ready to go.
Let's break it down. So like there's the backpack part, right? And then the CO2 cartridge that goes in. Now if you travel, you get on an airplane, you can't bring the CO2. But now they have them where, like, you can rent them at a lot of ski resorts.
You can rent them, or you can, I mean, because they're not cheap. They're usually a couple $100 just for the cartridge themselves.
Yeah.
But again, your life is worth it. You could either, you know, pack it in your check bag. That's okay, right?
I don't think so.
Is that not okay?
Because it's compressed. That's why you got to rent them. Ew. So you got to have the one that's rentable in where you go. So definitely look into it if you're going to do that.
I think better off just renting. Unless you're going to do something in Alaska. Like I have a friend of mine that went out to Alaska.
Well, if in the U.S., it's different than if you go like in Europe. And that's what I'm saying. Like there's one, I think that's Europe, U.S. Universal.
Hmm. Does that mean that the attachment is different?
The size or whatever. I don't know what it is, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know the backpacks, they can range in prices too. I mean, they can range from $200 to we've seen them for $1,200-$1,300.
Yeah,
for some really
just the
heavy
backpack
duty
without
backpacks.
The canister.
Yeah, that's what the can. That's the backpack with the airbag in there. And the best analogy that I ever saw about the airbag, which I thought was really cool, it talks about, you know, if you have an avalanche and it's coming down behind you, and you have your backpack and you deploy it, what it does is it makes you a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Your surface area is bigger, and when the avalanche comes, you're more likely to rise to the top than to be, you know, sunk and stuck underneath all that snow. And the analogy was almost like a tortilla chip bag. Think about when you open a big bag of tortilla chips. All the big chips are at the top, and all the tiny little crumbs and pieces fall to the bottom. So when you have that airbag and it deploys, it makes you bigger. You're like that big chip. You're kind of rising to the top.
Be the big chip.
Be the big chip. Instead of like, if you didn't have one, that snow will just mow you down and get you stuck underneath, and that's where you lose your air, and that's where you have your problems. So
think about kind of how cool that would be, though, right? So like, you click the switch, and this big balloon opens up, right? And you're just being like tossed around like a rag doll, and you're like, and then you end, and you're like on top of the pile. And you're like, wow, that was cool.
That's being the king of the world right there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
King of the world.
That was fucking great.
So you got nature.
But that was a great broad.
Is that all you got, nature? Let's do it again.
Do it again.
I got one more canister here. I can deploy this bad boy.
I'm ready to go.
You're sitting there, and you have this big bubble behind you, and you're on top of all this stuff.
It's like being a superhero.
And like your buddy's like 6 feet lower, you know?
So you're saying there's like a benefit to me being fatter than you guys.
Right.
No doubt.
So I'd be like at least 2 feet above you guys.
You'd rise to the top.
Same. I guess so. I don't know. Is it something to do with this? Is it size or weight, though?
I think it's just general.
Yeah,
because
those tortilla
size.
Chips, they don't weigh that much.
Yeah.
So you want to be
surface area.
You want to
really.
Be big but full of air.
I would do surface areas.
You're
yeah.
compact.
Yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah. Your compact heaviness is not going to help.
Come
you.
On.
Yeah. You need like surface area, like right. more surface area.
All right. So if I get fatter, like during the summer,
but you get like Fat Albert fat though.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's so if I'm Fat Albert, but like fat, no muscle fat, that's better for like avalanche protection.
Exactly.
It is better, but you want to have a lot of carbonated drinks, though.
Yes.
Right? So you got a lot of air in you.
Gaseous.
Oh, yeah.
Right
now.
So, yeah, your transponder, your airbag, and your backpack, a good shovel, range between $1,500.
See, the shovel I never understood. Like, see, I've seen people with shovels, and I'm looking at them like, that's pretty, I know they're going backcountry, and I'm like, that seems like a lot to bring.
I'm thinking
but they're all foldable, though. I mean, they're really... If you have that big backpack already, having the shovel in there really isn't a whole lot extra.
It should
you
be like
shovel your way out of there?
I think it's pretty much for minor incidences.
Is that why you
should
carry
pieces.
Explosives next to your body to... Like,
that's an option. I don't recommend it, but it is an option. Explosives.
I think I'd rather have like a Batman utility. You know,
I like the utility
where you can, like,
idea.
Shoot up and grab onto something and pull you.
I guarantee you, in
grappling
the next,
hook.
In the next,
always have a grappling hook.
In the
like,
next
I think a grappling hook
years,
would be better.
Next 5 to 10 years, that's definitely going to be the
right. Not even. You have a grappling hook, right? You're skiing down, or boarding down. Avalanche is coming. You see trees around.
Deploy
grappling
the
hook
grappling
right
hook.
Out there, and then you're pulling right up. I love that idea.
Yeah. I think that's the way to go.
I think that is the way to go, yeah.
I think that's a win-win-win.
I think one of the big problems is, though, when you're in an avalanche zone, a lot of times you're above the tree line, and there's no trees to launch your grappling hook onto.
Mm. Right at the edge of the trees. Boom.
How about
a drone? Have a drone.
Deploy the drone.
A drone that sends... It's almost like a drone that has a... And you have a beacon in your utility belt, and the drone launches the grappling hook onto you and pulls you up.
It's the I'm thinking like a go-go gadget, like arms. Remember that cartoon? Go-Go
yeah.
Gadget?
Inspector Gadget.
Like, do I not?
Right.
Go-Go Gadget.
He, like,
everything.
Shoots out the screen
oh,
and he, like,
time,
goes
gadget.
Into something.
Dr. Claw. What's
right.
up?
Go-Go Gadget Avalanche Avoidance.
Exactly.
Go-Go Gadget Drone. Take me
like,
out
you
of
know, say Xbox Turn On?
Yes.
Yes, how you
it's listening. Just, that's why I have a cover over.
Ah, well played.
The cover? Because it watches and listens.
Xbox Porn.
No.
It's not working.
See? It's not working.
But no, if you get some sort of like voice-controlled command, that'll like launch your drone with your grappling hook.
Go-Go Gadget.
Go-Go Gadget grappling hook.
I got a train.
You know, I've been thinking about
Go-Go
the drone.
Gadget.
Because we also bike ride in the summertime. And I'm thinking like, you know, the number one injury is, unfortunately, it's when dopey car drivers are distracted and they hit you from behind. What if you had a drone just like following you on your bike ride?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Just like following you.
But actually,
out.
So you have the
I
avalanche
think
that's pack, right? But they have the helmet. The invisible helmet for bikes. So if you get into an accident, it deploys and just like just push right around your head. No. They really do
they
have it.
That's fucked
up. Yeah.
Really.
They have an invisible helmet that like deploys.
I don't know if it's called the invisible helmet.
I'm thinking
but
it must be French.
The unhelmet.
I mean, no offense there.
You know what? The French get a bad rap. They are some pretty extreme gangster.
There you go.
Athletes.
Invisible helmet.
Now I've seen this invisible helmet, but
there you go. So it's the same idea, same premise as a an airbag.
Oh, so it deploys when it some sort of something. So what happened? How does it deploy though? What is it? What's
I don't know. It's
got to
be
happen?
Something that like jars you. Like
must be loud.
I guess if it's set too low, I imagine like, you know, you bump into me and all of a sudden, okay, I can't go riding today. But if you're gonna really crash,
my eardrums have burst.
Exactly. But that is freaky looking. So it is a helmet that just puffs up.
That is pretty awesome. And we'll post links in the show notes.
I've seen some pretty crazy crashes during the Tour de France. One was Jan Voigt. He freaking hit the pavement face first and just dragged. It was horrible. It was a horrible crash. And
that helmet right there.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't think it would have helped him.
Not for your face, no.
But think of that—the idea of a helmet—it's trying to protect the brain injury.
Your face
so,
is fine; like you can get scraped up. Your
face
nose
scrape
off.
Is one thing, but you're not going to be, you know.
You're not messing with your brain. You're
yeah,
going.
The
that's
brain
the most
is
important thing. Yeah.
Not the head injury. Yeah, that's the most important.
Why are they making it look so fashionable in these pictures?
Well, you got to put it at a French fashion show to make it look good. I like the bling bling and the diamonds and
I like
stuff.
That. It's like, yeah, we came from Paris to Milan to have the new invisible helmet. Everyone's wearing them this season.
Everyone
very
wants
fashionable.
To have the helmet.
Do you like the invisible helmet?
Do
no,
like
you can't see it. You don't know if you like it or not. Deploy!
Deploy the helmet.
Deploy the helmet.
Deploy the helmet.
It's
Dr. Evil.
So what else do you need? You can also, I mean, I've seen also, sometimes people carry saws with them.
Sauce.
Now, I don't know. The saw, I mean, part of me thinks that's maybe a good idea. 127 hours. Maybe you can saw your leg off if you get stuck somewhere.
Okay, so the saw is part of the testing kit. So now the testing kit, what you do is you dig a hole and you saw through and you look at the layers. Hmm. And there's actually like a, it's like a metal grid that has like grids drawn on it. So you can measure the granularity of the... Of the snow, so now you measure that. You measure, and there's formulas for the granularity versus the slope of the what you're climbing on, and that's how you can kind of judge how it's safe.
Now, would like the average person do that? Was that something more like the Rangers and the Ski Patrol?
Yeah, the average person, unless you took a course or went with somebody or a guide, like that's kind of the stuff the guide should do if you hire a guide. That's why if you're ever going backcountry skiing, always definitely go with a guide. Because that's messed up. We went to Switzerland a few years ago. People were skiing in areas that were like, people didn't even want to go in. They're like, no, this is avalanche danger. And I'm like, it's serious. Why would you go there? And like, oh, yeah. Well, they went the next day with a guide. And they're like, well, yeah, I'm not going over there because it's avalanche
danger.
That's
what the guide said.
The guide said.
And these numbnuts went the day before.
The day before.
Just skiing boarded it. Yeah.
It's just crazy. I mean, you know, you really got to know where you are, where you're going. I mean, if you're going to somewhere you don't know where, like, what, especially if you go to Europe, like, it's a whole different classification. So you should definitely do a guide.
Especially in like France, like Chamonix, like Mont Blanc, like there, you always hear about avalanches and people being killed over there. I mean, it is some wicked terrain.
So one of the things I looked up, there was a European and a North American like different standard for like avalanche danger, whatever. So they actually had a statistic that like, so it goes 1 through 5, 1 being the lowest, 5 being the highest, and in everyone, but the European value, they said France, most of the fatalities happen at 3-4. In Switzerland, most of the fatalities happen at 2-3.
What's 3-4, 2-3?
So it's just their ranking. Like, so it goes 5 is extreme, 4 high, 3 considerable, 2 moderate, 1 low. So that's North America, but they were saying that like the way the standard works is Europeans follow the same European standard, but like most of the fatalities in France, and they think it's the way they interpret the rules or the rating.
So they may not think a 3 being, you know, considerable is really that big of a deal.
So if it's avalanche danger and you're in Switzerland and it says 2 or 3, really be careful. If it's avalanche danger and you're in France, 3-4 is where most of the fatalities occur.
Ugh, see, that's really confusing then for people. So there isn't like a real standard across the board.
That's why you got to know where you're going.
Yeah.
Do a little research. Maybe talk to a guide.
Get a guide, yeah.
I always believe, you know what, if you're backcountry skiing in another country, it's worth enough because you went all the way that way.
You've traveled that much money.
Yeah.
Going over there, spending it on...
Getting a guide is...
Few hundred bucks is, it'll be worth it.
And you know what? The guides are going to be great. They're going to tell you.
Right.
They're going to give you directions on restaurants. They're going to, you know, tell you where to go. It's not just going to be a good guide for the mountain. I mean, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Always.
Everyone I've ever had, you know, Europe, out west, whatever, they've always made my experience that much better than I ever could have been just with me reading a book or, you know, kind of going on a whim.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. They're always worth the money. So if you can, definitely get a guide.
Yeah.
So sum it up, you know, get a guide, make sure you have the right gear, airbag, shovel, transceiver, saw, maybe a probe, you know, and
beacons.
Beacons. Well, the transceiver and the beacon are the same thing.
Transceiver,
yeah.
Beacon,
yeah.
For whatever you do.
Yes. If you're in the middle
there
of nowhere, definitely.
Okay.
And yeah,
watch ID for identification.
Right.
And watch your posted warnings. I mean, they're posting warnings for a reason, so be mindful of those and be smart and have fun.
Absolutely. And
definitely.
Wherever you can, just definitely, like, you know, help people out, especially avalanche ridden parts of Nepal. It's a bad situation right now.
Yeah, and if you can contribute to, you know, the Red Cross or any of the charities that are, you know, helping them out there, we'll post them all. Do what you can, because they're really going to need some help right now.
Absolutely, that'd be awesome.
All right, so we're taking a little bit of break, and then we're going to come back with the final around the horn. All right?
Oh, yeah.
So we will see
all
right. You in a few. All right, and we are back.
Yeah.
Had a little break there.
Yep.
We're regrouping. We're going to get back into... our and your favorite part of the show, which is the Around the Horn. Just to give you guys a heads up, again, skibumpodcast.com. The website is coming together. We're building it out. All of our links to social media, anything you need is going to be there. We'll have this podcast there, which hopefully you found because you're listening to it. So thank you very much. So, SkiBumPodcast.com, at SkiBumPodcast on Twitter. Go to the website. Check it out. Leave comments. Let us know what you think. I'm still building it out. We're going to have a whole new skin this summer, but right now it's
Brian's
up there.
Getting creative. I like the color scheme.
The color scheme. We'll probably have a podcast talking about why we chose the colors.
Oh, we definitely have to go through that.
Because you know what? In the summertime, not a lot of snow for us up here in North America, so we're going to have other topics to talk about the design.
It's snowing my mind now.
It's always snowing in our minds. So, around the horn. Boom. Okay. What do we got? Who wants to start it off?
I'll start off.
Mario.
Jumping in.
Kick it.
Chipotle, non-GMO. I love that.
GMO.
GMO is bad.
GM over it.
Listen,
I'm GM over it.
I am 100% behind you on that. I mean, it's an awesome move by the Chipotle Corporation. It wasn't
easy. It's
Chipotle.
Easy. Please, can we all just look at the word?
Chipotle.
Chipotle.
It's a pepper company. That's all I say.
Chipotle.
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 Thank you.
Chipotle.
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 You're mixing
Chipotle
letters, right?
That's cool. They are, right? Oh, mixed letters like a mofo.
Your name is Romayo, then.
It is.
Okay, Romayo.
B-Ron.
Yes.
Yeah, it works.
Hey, you're right about that. What's with that?
Yeah, people.
Why does people do that?
Momentum.
People, why does people do
think
that?
About
like
it.
That?
People hear things and they repeat
people
it.
People does what people want to do.
With anything. People hear things and they repeat it.
What,
people hear the wrong thing and they repeat it. They don't
okay
know any better.
Anyway, let's see. G-O-M.
Chipotle.
G-O-M is bad.
Yes.
And it was a big effort here.
That's a huge step for a company, right?
Well, you know, here's the deal. It was pretty easy for some of their ingredients. So they said, okay, let's do this. It's the right thing. But when it came to the chips, it was a challenge. And
ooh,
that's why it took
like
so long. And I commend them for taking that step. And you know what's going to happen now? It's going to be a lot easier for other chip companies, Ortega. Right? Ortega? Did I say that wrong? Ortega?
Ooh, I don't know.
How about Ortega?
It's got to be Ortega.
Ortega.
It's Ortega.
Ortega.
You can't, you know.
Think about that. They took a monumental step here and other
Chipotle
companies.
Chipotle and Ortega.
Other companies are going to see that and there's going to be other companies that are going to jump on board. You wait. This football season, when we're all buying chips, you're going to see a lot more GMO chips out there because of Chipotle.
So one of the big buzzes right now about that is, so they made that move and now they're actually, it's kind of a checkmate, like haha, the rest of the like fast food world or quality, whatever they call it, convenience food, like
fast food,
convenience food.
They don't, because they're not fast food.
Yep,
it's good food fast. But anyway, it puts the pressure on the other people to say, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to like push the way everybody eats and the way everybody grows and produces like food to say you're not going to be GMO too, or you're going to put yourself on this side of the fence or that side of the fence, which I think it's great for them. I think it's got a lot of balls and I like it.
It's a good move. And like, I don't know if you guys are paying attention. Like this past week, McDonald's had their reported earnings for the first quarter and they got slammed. People are just not going to McDonald's. You know, people are kind of fed up. They want something healthier. They want a different option. So I think companies like Chipotle, which are, you know, again, getting rid of GMOs, trying to be a little more health conscious. They sell these, you know, 2,000-pound, 8-pound burritos.
Yeah,
but they're more concerned about the products they put in there. And, you know, I think
awesome
people
stuff
are going to be better off having these healthier products than...
I think people are looking for healthier options.
You know who doesn't care one bit about this? Fucking Taco Bell. They're going to keep producing exactly what they're producing. They're going to have like guacamole-flavored taco shells, and they're still going to have amazing profit, and we're still going to line up to get it because, you know what? Taco Bell has its place, and they know their role.
And you know what? Their earnings were great.
Exactly, they were.
They were awesome.
But look at this area. We don't have a lot of taco options, right?
We
have a lot
Coast
of burger options. That's why McDonald's is taking a tumble. We have what moved in? Smashburger, like
Five Guys,
like all these
burger
places
chains
moved
are
in
good.
All the burgers moved in.
West Coast.
No tacos moved in. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Del Taco.
Never gonna happen.
That would be a competitor to Taco Bell. I'm just saying.
We do have one Wahoo's fish taco place, but it's in New York City. So if you're not in the city, you're limited.
If you're not in Jersey, I'm not seeing you. That's what I'm saying.
It's true. Yeah, we're kind of we're out of luck there. So So, you got anything else, or?
That's my around the horn.
All right.
My around the horn is just with the conversation we were talking about with avalanches. You know, I did a quick little search. There's a website called Brick House Securities, and they have...
It's a brick house. There you go.
Mario's singing ability. That's a slogan. Thank you for that. That was awesome.
It's horrible.
Slow clap.
But, you know, there's a lot of devices you get for your kids, and, you know, $20, $29, $30, and their GPS devices put in their pockets, and you'll just know where they are in the mountains. Very simple. There are coats that have them incorporated, but you know what? They might take their coat off. So you can get these small devices that could put in their pants.
So they chip a dog. You can't chip your kid? Is that illegal?
You might not want to do that.
Damn it.
Eventually we'll all be embedded with
I don't have kids, so I'm just wondering, like, is it...
So that's my around the horn. It's a quick little... And you could, you know, you could put the same $29 in your car or your device or whatever you're afraid of getting stolen.
A drone to follow your daughter around. That'd be good.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I don't know what that is. I've grown up with that, right?
Yeah, I got a bunch of little things. Whistler, in the Alpine now, it's 0 degrees Celsius. They're still getting snow.
Yeah!
Great conditions.
Hell yeah.
Snowbird is, they're staying open until next weekend. So you have this weekend and next weekend to get out there, get your tracks in. And the one big thing I want to talk about, there's this crazy rise going on in Baltimore right now. Today, the Orioles had canceled the last couple games because of the rioting. They couldn't get people to the stadium. Today, they played a game in a completely, in an empty stadium. I guess only the press was allowed in there. It was not open to the public. And so it was like the first time ever there was a zero attendance baseball game.
That's awesome.
Which is absolutely crazy. They mentioned
which. It's going to eventually happen to all baseball games.
Boring. I'm just saying, though, right now, Killington, 40 trails open.
Yeah, I saw that this weekend. They got a couple extra
open extra lists.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about going.
Pretty sweet. And then also, you know, you got the, Mario, we mentioned this earlier, the Kentucky Derby this weekend. NFL draft tomorrow. Pacquiao Mayweather fight. It's a big fight. Spend $200 at pay-per-view, whatever it costs.
Or go out to a bar for free.
Go to a bar. I'll probably charge covers because the pay-per-view.
Draft tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I will spend my money on Uber and go out and watch it.
You could do that too.
Blue House. Free. Boom.
All right. Anything else, guys, or you want to wrap this thing up?
No, I think we're good.
Wrap it up. Great
session.
All right,
guys. Thank you so much for listening. It was a great time. We will chat again next week.
I love that music.
Have a wonderful day.
Peace. Peace out.